The next case is 05132, Board of Education of North Olmsted City School District versus the Board of Education of the Cleveland Municipal School District. Just make sure I know, are you Mr. Summers?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I didn't have you checked in, so did you check in? Okay, that's our fault then. You may begin.
Good morning, Chief Justice and Associate Justices. My name is Sylvester Summers, and I am counsel for the appellant, the North Olmsted School Municipal School District. Request that I reserve 1 minute of rebuttal time.
What's your time there?
This case is of significant importance regarding public revenue and tax dollars received by public schools throughout the state of Ohio. We're seeking a reversal of the 8th District Court of Appeal decision, which reversed the trial court's grant of summary judgment to my client, the appellant, North Olmsted School District. The number of facts in this case, essentially the facts in this case are not in dispute. For the most part, this case is about a matter of law. However, there are a number of factual statements throughout the 8th District Court of Appeals decision, which I'd like to bring to the attention of this court this morning. The court stated the appellee received tax dollars to which it is not entitled to on personal property not in its jurisdiction. The second statement, the appellant did not receive the tax dollars to which it was entitled. The last statement made by the Court of Appeals below was the benefit of the Cleveland Municipal School District received was a result of a mistaken levy. My reason for bringing these three facts to the court's attention, as opposed to other facts, is because it somehow suggests, somehow or another, there was no connection or nexus between the mistaken levy by the Cleveland Municipal School District and the imposition of the tax on personal property that's located outside the taxing jurisdiction of the appellee.
Counsel, I think that the thrust of the Court of Appeals opinion here was, we understand that there's $78,000 that went to Cleveland that should have gone to North Olmsted, but as the judge stated, we don't have a remedy. We don't know what a remedy would be in order to transfer these dollars back. What is your response to that?
My response is I believe that the Court of Appeals, along with the Franklin County Court of Appeals, are relying on an 1886 case, which kind of stands in the way of the remedy for complaining school districts to find a recovery in equity. And the impetus of that decision was the taxes generated here were based on a levy not produced by the complaining school district. The problem with that is that the levy is mistaken. We have a Court of Appeals stating that the levy is mistaken. If you look at the statute, 5711.07, which talks about business personal property, it specifically states that property shall be listed and assessed in the taxing district where the business is carried on. In this particular case, there's no business carried on in the appellee's taxing district. There was no taxable event that occurred in that taxing district. There's nothing in these facts to suggest that jurisdiction or the power to tax, which attributed to sovereignty, ever occurred in this case. So what's happening here is that these line of Court of Appeals decisions relying on an archaic idea as a determining factor as to why complaining school districts cannot seek remedy against a school district receive tax proceeds, which are really essentially generated outside of their jurisdiction, taxing district. And that's the problem. It's my belief that but for these errors, these clerical errors by the county auditor or clerical error made by the taxpayer, there would never have been a mistaken levy. So to rely on this determining factor of the mistaken levy is just the wrong standard.
Does that mean you should have sued the person who made the mistake instead of sued the district that ended up with your money?
Matter of fact, Your Honor, we did in fact sue the county auditor. The county auditor, however, did not appeal the grant of summary judgment against them at the trial court level.
Didn't it start with the taxpayer listing the incorrect school district?
Yes, it did start with the taxpayer. You know, as you know, in the taxing process, everything in the taxing process is linked. The listing, if the listing is wrong, the assessment is going to be wrong, then the levy is going to be wrong. That means the collection could be wrong and a distribution of the tax could be wrong. What we have going on right now in the state of Ohio is relying on an archaic idea that it doesn't matter that it was a county auditor made a mistake. Mistaken levy is going to rule.
But, counsel, the county auditor didn't make the mistake here. The taxpayer did. The taxpayer did not pay his taxes to North Olmsted, Circuit City, correct?
No. Specifically, you know, taxpayers don't pay taxes directly to the school district.
Well, I understand that, but in essence, the taxpayer denoted Cleveland Municipal School District.
That's correct, Your
as
Honor.
The district to which taxes were to be distributed by the county auditor.
And they admitted later that it was an error.
They admitted it later, but too late to do something for a reconfiguration on the part of Circuit City.
Well, I'm not here, you know, prosecuting the case on behalf of the taxpayer, so I don't want to get too far. I understand your point, Your Honor. But also, too, that the county also exacerbated that error, because the county auditor also has an obligation by statute to correct errors as they go along the process. So my point is that if there's an error from the listing and assessment, there's also an error in the levy. What I'm saying is that the Court of Appeals here in Franklin County and the 8th District of Macaulay County are using the Lime decision, which is based on this mistaken levy idea, as a determining factor as to why complaining school districts cannot seek an equity to go after tax dollars, public revenue, which really evolve out of their taxing jurisdiction.
Is North Olmsted seeking only the $74,000? Is North Olmsted seeking only the amount of revenue it would have received if the taxing rate in North Olmsted District would have been applied, or are you seeking the refund? Does the $75,000 represent the amount of taxes that the Cleveland School District formula produced?
No, Your Honor. The record only reflects the fact that the appellant is only seeking that amount of money which it would have received but for the mistaken levy and assessments made by others. It's not seeking more money. We don't know exactly the amount of money it was actually received, but in light of the fact that the appellee has a higher tax rate and my client has a lower tax rate, that problem of because there's a difference in levy rates, we're not seeking more money than it would have been otherwise been entitled to, and there's no evidence in the record that we are.
Tell me what happens when the school district receives its check, or however it receives the money from the county treasurer or the auditor,
county treasurer.
Doesn't someone in the administrative offices at the school board check to make sure that the funds they're receiving are the funds that they should be receiving? And isn't there a process for challenging that if they think it's the incorrect amount?
The problem, unlike real estate property, the challenges are more obvious. But regarding business personal property, school districts don't get to see the tax returns of taxpayers once they're filed with the state.
So, but they have some idea of how much money they're going to receive from the county. Sure they do.
They're
counting every dollar, hopefully, and so they if there's a missing amount from the amount they expect to receive for this period, whatever the period is, there's a process, isn't there, for challenging the amount that they've received, or is there not?
I'm not aware of the challenge with the kid, but the way the statute is currently construed, what they can do after the fact, after the taxes are assessed, levied, collected and distributed to the school district, my client did all they could do to try to collect these taxes. And it was a five-year period of time where the taxpayer, Circuit City, admitted they made the errors. They corrected 3 out of 5 years. And in 1997 and 98 returns, they could not correct those problems.
And that was because why? A statute I couldn't understand from the briefs why they couldn't. There's a statement made they couldn't correct the 97-98, the 2 years they couldn't correct. Why was that?
What?
Time had run?
I don't know that there's a statute of limitations regard to their obligation to try to seek to recover. The only remedy I know of is the remedy we seek here today, which is an equity, which has a 6-year statute of limitations, Your Honor. Now, I don't know of any specific written obligation they have under the statute to make an objection after they have received the tax proceeds and there's a problem with their annual funding.
One last question, maybe not the last one, but one more question. They corrected it for 99 and two or three years, But then in 2002, the mistake was made again. Is that right? Is that understand?
I'm saying it was made again.
The same taxpayer, Circuit City, made the same mistake again.
I think it was a situation where you have a large national corporation and they do their tax returns and they're not done it in the state of Ohio, prepared to some corporate office, some other state, done by a computer, and I think email just sent to the taxing district and to the state of Ohio, you know, along with payment. But the bottom line here, Your Honor, is the course of appeals both here in Franklin County as in the Carter Lumber case and Eighth District Court below are relying on this Lime decision from 1886 and saying because the tax was levied by the non-complaint by the wrong school district somehow or another, that's a determining factor as to why you can't seek equity to try to recover these dollars. And I think the standard should be, which is reflected in other pronouncements by the Ohio Supreme Court, if she based upon where's the taxable event. Where's the location of the business property? If the business property is not located in your taxing district, that, you know, it should have some congruence between, the, you know, some connection between what the state is seeking to tax. If there's no connection, no nexus between the two, how can you impose a mistaken levy on properties not in your jurisdiction?
We normally would say if someone has been unjustly enriched at the hand of another, then the equity principle might apply. But I think Cleveland is saying we may or may not have been unjustly enriched, but it wasn't by you. It was by a different party. Well, how do we deal with that issue?
It's a difficult issue, Your Honor. I mean, certainly the three elements in the Hamilton case from the High Supreme Court don't accurately apply to these facts. The reason being, this is a tax case involving public revenue. These are not private litigants or they're fighting over millions of dollars. You know, these are they're larger public policy issues. No, my client did not confer some direct financial benefit upon the school district. But still at the same time, what we have a situation here is where school districts are being allowed by a mistaken levy to impose tax on property outside of their jurisdiction when directly the statute talks about listing and assessing property in your taxing district where the business is carried on.
How did your client discover the error?
The error was discovered later on by the school board treasurer, who's an MBA and CPA, was going through the budgets and going through and got hold of the tax returns years down the road and was able to notice that this error had been occurring and contact Circuit City. Circuit City admitted they had made the errors and immediately tried to do everything they could by statute to correct the errors.
Well, your client was collecting the real estate tax for the Circuit City property, and I assume...
No, not real estate tax. It was they would collect. The goal was to collect personal property tax.
Right, I understand, but I assume that's the way that person noticed is they've got this big building out there, they're getting real estate tax off of, and they weren't getting any personal property tax.
I think what happened is the school board treasurer just did an investigation, started to notice there were some errors in the annual funding and in the budgets, and specifically looked at specific taxpayers within their taxing district to see what the problem was.
You said that you don't get to see the actual tax
not
return.
Not at the time they actually filed, no. I think tax returns are confidential at the time they're
right. So all you could discover is there seemed to be a hole.
That's correct.
And you go looking for the hole and discover.
But it's not a hole that you see at the time the actual tax returns are filed.
Right.
So, I mean, there's nothing statutory which kind of allows you to kind of look at, have all the information in front of you, and you say, oh, there's a problem. Let's correct this right now.
So the same problem could occur for individual taxpayers on their state income tax returns because everybody has to put down what school district they live in.
In theory, it could, Your Honor.
And since some school districts now have a local income tax, if they put down the wrong number, the tax ends up in the wrong pocket.
And that's the problem we're trying to remedy here, because this, apparently the courts of appeal need some direction because they're still relying on, in my opinion, an archaic concept that you can use this mistaken levy as a basis upon which you can deny recovery of a school district, complaining of a school district.
Well, counsel, what would you like to see this court do? What rule of law do we promulgate here?
One of the things that this court talked about in 1996 state lottery commission case, it talked about that, you know, a tribute to the state, in order to trigger the state's power to tax, there must be a connection between the state and what it seeks to tax. generated in part by a transaction or event that generated income for the taxpayer. And in that statement, it all gets back to jurisdiction and sovereignty. If it's not in your taxing district, that's the standard that should be used. Location, location, location. You can't use a mistake, which is based on another mistake, as a basis to deny recovery. A more fair and less harsher standard would be, where's the location of the property? Where's the taxable event? There's certainly no taxable event, no business situs, no tax situs in the Appalachian School District. That fact is undisputed.
Counsel, doesn't it seem that the Court of Appeals took a look at that argument and said we're really not talking about a state taxation for the benefit of all school districts, which would include both parties here, but we're talking about specific school districts levying themselves?
It's a problem. There's no question. I know you're making reference to the Indian Hill versus Atkins case, where there was this one standard rate which the state imposed on everyone. But school districts, I said I'm over my time, so
you can finish your thought.
However, and I know with school districts, they have different levy rates. But the fact of the matter is that you can't use a mistaken levy rate, if that's the standard, as a basis to deny recovery. Because but for the errors, the mistakes, there would be absolutely no connection whatsoever between these tax dollars and Appley. No connection, but for the errors. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Summers. Mr. Hewitt.
Morning, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court. I'm James Hewitt, representing Cleveland Municipal School District. I think it's important that the court understand how this all evolved. It was 1997, and a corporate office in Richmond, Virginia, Circuit City, fills out an inter-county personal property tax return and erroneously lists for its property there on Lorraine Road, which is actually in the city of North Olmsted and within the North Olmsted Board of Education School District, that particular property is in the Cleveland School District. That personal property tax return is timely filed with the state tax commissioner, who then prepares assessments that go to the county auditor. The county auditor prepares both preliminary and final assessments. A bill goes out to the taxpayer. That bill is paid, and in this instance, the bill was the tax was computed based on the Cleveland levy. That happened both in 97, 98, 99, 2000, 2001, and apparently 2002.
Counsel, was 97 the first year that Circuit City was paying these taxes?
It doesn't appear that. I'm not sure of that, Your Honor. I'm not sure. But, the record does confirm that it wasn't until May of 2001 that someone at the North Olmsted Board of Education realized that they weren't getting this tax revenue. And when you look at the second supplement that the Board of Education for the Cleveland District submitted to this court, the letter from the treasurer from the North Olmsted District to Circuit City says, it has come to our attention from your office, North Olmsted, that we've been filing incorrectly intercounty tax returns on property within Cleveland. It should have been filed with North Olmsted. And we submit that there's a statutory framework for the collection, distribution, and challenging and validation of personal property taxes. There's
Counsel, you assess that. You claim in your brief that because the Cleveland levy applied, Cleveland should get the money, correct?
Under the principle of Lyme Township, unless there's privity, unless the complaining school district's levy applies, they can't get
it. But in reality, the application of the Cleveland levy was a mistake. It was not based on the fact that the property was in your district. It was a mistake, a clerical mistake by someone.
There are adequate checks and balances in order to verify and to correct
that mistake.
The
question is, was it a mistake that the Cleveland levy applied? It was a clerical mistake somewhere.
Initiated by the taxpayer themselves.
Okay. And your position basically is that there is no remedy when that mistake occurs.
Absolutely. Not under the General Assembly Chapter 57 as it relates to the collection, distribution, and verification of personal property taxes.
So there is no remedy for such a mistake. It's if somebody else, not your fault, but somebody else makes a clerical mistake, applies the wrong levy, and sends you the check, you have no obligation whatsoever to return it.
each treasurer and each school district has an obligation, as described within the statute, in order to verify the income that it receives. It has an obligation based on the preliminary assessment, the final assessment itself.
Let's say that that check was sent to you, and your treasurer looks at it, your Cleveland district treasurer looks at it and says, this is a mistake. We shouldn't have gotten this. You can keep the check.
Again, Your Honor, as you might, it's not separate checks, as you know.
True, but you can look at the amount in your check.
One big check.
And if you discover the mistake, you have the right to keep it, even if you were the one.
I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that. No. But again, when we look at the statutory framework, there's a process already described within the statute by which North Olmsted, Cleveland, or any school district within the state of Ohio may be able to challenge the revenues that it believes that it should have.
What did they do wrong in not challenging that? What did they do wrong?
Cleveland?
Yes. No, what did Olmsted do wrong?
North Olmsted did several things wrong. When it received its preliminary assessment, which includes lists of the properties, that personal property tax within the district, it said nothing. When the final assessment came along again, it said nothing.
Let's say if they've got the initial form and it had it as going to Cleveland and not them. You've already told me there's no remedy.
No, at that point you raise your hand to the county auditor. You say there's been a mistake being made, and ostensibly I would believe the county auditor would make a correction.
But there's no legal ability to force that correction, according to you.
Well, I think so, absolutely.
What is the legal process?
Could they correct the error?
What if the auditor says I'm not going to do it?
Well, then it's mandamus, I would think. But understand this, the auditor did correct the error in accordance with the statutory framework in which it was allowed.
Then allege that there is a time limit on that?
I would think so. There's probably a time limit by which any taxpayer is permitted to amend one's returns. And that's the reason why the 97 and 98 returns were not permitted to be amended.
So Circuit City had to proceed with a request for an amendment to get the ball rolling to get the dollars to the right school district post-97.
That's correct.
And because of the statute of limitations, the six-year look-back period, that was inapplicable to the 97 tax year.
I believe so. I'm not sure of the particular reason, Justice O'Connor, but I mean...
I mean, I'm trying to figure out how some of this got back to North Olmsted. And these years are in dispute here, and reading the briefs.
All I can presume is that there is a limitation described within the statute of limitations for filing returns, and they precluded a recovery or a redistribution for 97 and 98.
Okay.
And that there's a practical effect for that.
So there's a window here of opportunity that was missed, and like a lot of things that happen in the regulatory system and the collection of dollars, and whether it's income tax or personal property tax, if you don't act in a timely manner, you're precluded from recovery.
Absolutely.
And that basically is your argument here.
Well, I can only imagine if General Motors files, I would imagine, inter-county tax return. Say, for example, it incorrectly listed the Lordstown plant or even, Justice O'Donnell, the Parma Chevrolet plant as being in Cleveland. Can you imagine the amount of revenue that's generated from those particular facilities? When those preliminary assessments are issued, and even the final assessment, somebody at the Treasurer's Department is going to wake up and say, what's going on here? There must be an error, and if there's an error discovered in a timely manner, obviously it can be corrected. But when you talk about errors that are left and continue for over a six-year period of time, unfortunately, under the state of the law, that's you know, it's not going to be permitted.
Is there any
recovered
law to be made here?
Absolutely not. The law is all in conformity with your opinions. Lyme Township is good, invalid law. Zapanik versus Carter Lumber, 10th District. Now, this case in the 8th District, we believe it certainly resolves any concerns that were raised by Rocky River versus Fairview Park. The law is well settled. We think it promotes diligence. We think it promotes conscientiousness. We think it promotes that every school district, as it said in Carter Lumber, is presumed to know the sources of its revenue. There is a...
Well, Counsel, I want to go back to it. something you just said. You said, well, if it's beyond a certain time and it's not within the mechanism for the taxpayer to correct, unfortunately, there's nothing can be done. That's not entirely true. Your client doesn't view this as unfortunate. Your client views it as fortunate. Your client could have just said, you know, we'll be good neighbors and write a check and give it back. But they chose not to. I want to go to the Court of Appeals opinion, which just says, well, unjust enrichment is a theory that doesn't apply. And you like a 100-and-some-year-old case of ours that would make this come out that way. Why would it not be fair and well within the theories of unjust enrichment for us to conclude under this set of facts that there is unjust enrichment and that the amount of money that they would have collected, not the full amount of money that you collected, but the amount of money that they would have collected should be given over to them?
I believe it's textbook fundamental law that for unjust enrichment, as you know, the benefit must be conferred by North Olmsted. In this instance, it was conferred by Circuit City. The recipient, Cleveland District, has to have knowledge of the benefit. Admittedly, we did not know when this occurred.
It was conferred by the county treasurer, who wrote a check to your school district, mistakenly.
Which flowed from the fact that Circuit City incorrectly placed the Cleveland District's name.
It gave their money to you. That's because right. The taxpayer made a mistake.
That's correct. And our levy was applied, and taxes based on our levy.
So you're saying we couldn't conclude that they conferred a benefit?
The taxpayer conferred the benefit.
Well, but it was their money.
The
other school district's
money is a pass-through, Justice.
Right.
It's a pass-through. So the money itself is coming from the taxpayer.
The money was rightfully North Olmsted's. So how didn't they confer a benefit?
Except when the taxpayer is billed at the Cleveland levy amount. And Lyme says that when you don't have...
So that's how it falls out of
the
grasp of unjust enrichment.
That's right. That's right. Lyme Township says if it's not the subject property is not taxed upon your particular levy, you have no standing to recover it. And then textbook.
Maybe it's time to overrule that case.
Well, I think that would disrupt a system and a process that is this case certainly reminds district treasurers of the conscientiousness that they need to follow. To watch every dollar. If we're, you know, again, as Bannock said, given the uncertainty of school funding by DeRolf, and we all can appreciate that unless the legislature decides and determines how it's going to deal with the bigger pictures of school funding, and then when we get these little limited instances or mistakes, that they need to be discovered in a timely manner. I mean, that's the rule that I think your opinion should say.
Well, counsel, I don't think that there's any doubt that schools certainly try and be as conscientious as they can about watching their dollars, but here Circuit City paid a higher tax than it should have. You know, so there's some obligation on the business owner, I would think, either on a local level or certainly at the corporate office, to say, you know, we should be as diligent with the spending of our dollars as well. But say the roles were reversed here. And Cleveland came on the short end of the stick here. Do you think that you'd be satisfied with the position that you're asking North Olmsted to be satisfied with here?
Your Honor, I understand it's an unduly harsh situation. I think I'd have to advise my client. And when this all came along, you know, let's be neighborly, let's be professionals, we found some panic. We brought it to their attention. That's good and valid law, and it's based on sound principles, and the 8th District Court of Appeals now agreed, and it's our obligation as counsel to protect the legitimate integrity of your client. So, yes, it's a hard situation. I think it's a valuable and important lesson to learn, you know, to pay attention to those preliminary assessments. when those tax bills assessments come out, and when the county auditor sends you your statement of estimated resources to assign a clerk to review it, so that when your tax budget is adopted and that when it finally gets to the Budget Commission, if there's a hiccup and there's a problem, you have the ability, as described within the statute, in order to challenge and to make an appeal to the Ohio Board of Tax Appeals from a Budget Commission ruling, again, in a timely manner.
When you say, though, that every district is presumed to know its source of revenues, I think you made that statement, are you saying that it's only that you check your preliminary assessments to make sure you're getting all the money you deserve, but you don't care about any overpayments? I mean, doesn't it work both ways? If you're presumed to know the source of revenue, would it not be maybe in Cleveland's bailiwick to also acknowledge if there is an overpayment from a business not within the district?
I would think so. I would think so.
So it's a two-way thing. I mean, both school districts may have been able to find this error.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, we didn't challenge when the refunds and the adjustments were made for 98, 99, 2000. It was done. But then when the issue gets to the tax council and we review the circumstances for 97, 98, they don't have a procedural remedy. They don't have a substantive remedy. You know, we could be, you know, the moral thing, as they would assert, is to turn the money over. But again, there's a standard here that, you know, Zapanek has described. You know, we were concerned first because the law in Cuyahoga County was not Zapanek. And indeed, the trial court followed Rocky River.
So this may well be something the General Assembly wants to take a look at and potentially create a remedy for one of the districts that does get shortchanged.
That's possibly, but at this point there is
not. So, Counsel, you're basically, I hear your answer to Justice Lansinger, is that a windfall is something you're going to take and not question.
You know, I don't think that's necessarily fair, Justice O'Connor. You know, we all have an obligation to review our assessments. I can't speak to my treasurer as to what happened back in 97. You know, there's a variety of different things that occurred. You know, the technical point is, as the laws is defined, as the procedures are defined now, if things are identified in a timely manner, sure.
Well, then the whole argument here is merely a statute of limitations argument, and that's where it should be analyzed beginning and end. Because if you're not going to shoulder some responsibilities on behalf of the receiving school district to and somehow take a look at a windfall and not question it and, you know, hold the district that is at a loss here to a standard of scrutinizing the books so they can, you know, detect any sort of – I mean, you're trying to teach a lesson is basically what you're saying, is that this is a good lesson for school treasurers to be on their toes. It's a two-way street.
We would understand that, Your Honor.
So the whole analysis has to start and end with the statute of limitations on the ability to look back to a 97-year tax transaction occurrence and say the window closed and there's no remedy.
And the fact that that tax needs to be applied based on your own levies. That's lime.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Hewitt. Mr. Summers, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Very briefly, you know, a mistake is a mistake. A mistaken levy is not the same thing as finding significant connections between the taxing authority and what they seek to tax. And this whole policy by the Appellees Council of finders, keepers, losers, weepers is not the kind of thing this honorable court should be promoting regarding public revenue and the school system throughout the state of Ohio. Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.